Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Sonic Effects. It's hard to realize that, you know, unlike other programs on about Freemasonry, we don't talk much about other things going on, where other conferences or the dates and times of and locations of speeches or presentations. We've been putting it out there for well over 10 years. Talking frankly and candidly and authentically about questions, not in terms of a rhetoric, not in terms of expressing what we think or you should be thinking, but more in terms of the dialectic. An educational effort, particularly and unashamedly about a moral character, because we're convinced here that that Freemasonry is fundamentally about character, about conscience, about contemplation. Not to say that there are, it dismisses any of the other aspects of Freemasonry. No, it's time to look at this as grown men, not little boys, and not with umbrage. This is there are different aspects of Freemasonry. Just like saying if we're going to jump into the whole notion of character development, it would be ridiculous and pointless to be approaching it as if there is one character that we're going to in some way shape or form in a formulaic manner. Oh, the gentleman, you know darn well the math just doesn't add up with that type of approach. No, this is about the spectrum of Freemasonry. The spectrum. This is why the dialectic is important. We educate, you make decisions, you determine for yourself whether it has some bearing on you. You weigh the merit of the assumptions and points that are made in the commentary that we offer here and anywhere in Freemasonry. Whether you listen, whether you hear, that is a trait, that is a purpose for which you are responsible, not anybody else. And it's not finger pointing kind of responsibility, it's an acknowledgement. We each have agency. And how we develop is a matter of the questions we put to ourselves in some ways. Altogether reasonable to think, who was it that said we are what we do? That's reasonable. The men that go about their business performing worthwhile acts, fundraising and contributing to community and to people's lives, that is important. As equally important is the person that approaches Freemasonry on a more philosophical level. Where is, it's simple to think, where are the serious questions? What are the questions that are put in your lodge or in your life? There are many ways to find answers to the questions that are important to you. What are the important questions? Well, as a starting point, Freemasonry has been excelling for centuries, helping men to, like you and I, to organize our thinking. Today, it's more populism. It seems to have taken us by the collar and taught us that it's all right to, that it's perfectly reasonable to be emotional and reject other ideas. And it's gotten to the point where we can wonder out loud whether we're being encouraged in our search for individuality to be somewhat narcissistic. That's a reasonable kind of a doubt. More to the point, what questions do you put to yourself? And when do you put those questions to yourself? Freemasonry is not an alert. It's not suggesting that this is the only path, but it offers in an awkward way, as awkward as it is, a path to enlightenment. Well, here where I'm sitting, we pick up that idea and launch ourselves into the works of Joseph Campbell. And it's a wonderful, relieving, expansive type of process, enlightenment. We can't buy it. It doesn't apply, certainly in Masonic effects. We do everything that we can to ensure that a listener does not feel that they are a commodity. You're not a commodity. You're responsive. You are what you are. The many branches of Freemasonry we can examine. For those who think that, want to whittle this down and see the similarities between Freemasonry and business, well, I would applaud that idea, but when I think of a business, I don't think of Freemasonry. And when I think of Freemasonry, well, I can extrapolate. I can say it's a fraternal order. In the practice, you're talking about the difference between the ideal and the practice. Well, gee, how many times I've rolled my eyes, impolitely, I might add, when I've heard people grinding their teeth about, you know, capitalism or socialism or communism. I mean, you sit there and you read the manuscripts, you read the material, and you think, well, what they're talking about isn't what's there. It's like, you're not, it's like, when do we have a discussion of merit based on the math, based on the geometry, not on what we want to believe? Oh, the dangers, they're all there. The risks, believe what we want to believe, you know, the confirmation bias, always there. And yet, we know, you know, that there are people, bright men and women every day who rise above that, who begin to question. Do you remember the first time you were wrestling with notions of objectivity and subjectivity? And, you know, you had that debate in your mind, there is no objectivity, everything is. Remember that? Well, what's the rightness and the wrongness of that? The purpose, ask yourself the purpose. What's the purpose of Freemasonry? If not to increase the depth of the human experience, increase our understanding of one of the greatest mysteries of all, the self, the mind, how we function, how we work, our purpose, our ethics, our principles. Welcome to Masonic Effects we're not going to be here talking about dates and times of presentations of ideas that are all remarkable and worth attending. We're going to share ideas. And hopefully you'll give us some feedback here. And we'll provide some education or entertainment. Now, sit back with your favorite beverage, take a deep breath, relax a bit. This isn't a drive-through life. You do that somewhere else. Do that somewhere else. This is where you take a moment for yourself, not because you're compelled to. I mean, good grief. Because you feel there's some value to this whole process. We'll kick the show off with a little Dave Brubeck tune from 1954, Stompin' for Millie. Thank you. not bad at all. We're more than just a pretty face. We have some talent. What you do? Sit back and take in a commentary today that I think is worthy of some attention. I can understand how masonry has floated in some ways, drifted away from a philosophical environment. I mean, that's monstrously difficult. How do you engage men in an ongoing way about themes that are philosophical? Well, it's not that we can do it concretely. I would think it would be more like an introduction and a lecture series. We'd always be introducing people to the notions, but in the same theater would be people that have been experiencing introductions for 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years. It gets a little bit, it's like a birthday. Your fifth birthday was spectacular. Your 50th birthday, not so much, Oh, right, it's a special occasion, but you know what I mean. So how do you sort this? Because new boys will always be coming through the door, needing that opportunity for instruction. Some will be advanced, some will be distracted, some will be new and open-minded. Some will be struggling with their own demons, the closed-mindedness. Mm-hmm. Just because our obligations say things about us, the ruthlessness of that is living up to it. I think that's quite compelling. Here, we'll follow that notion. Now, remind me to talk more about the change in geometry. If you're looking at how we go about it, how do we've drifted away because it's come complicated. But you create an atmosphere where the notion is one of inspiration, of thoughtfulness. And we can use the lowest common denominator, but we must not ever lose sight of the highest common denominator. Looking at Freemasonry from both sides now, that's a homage to a song from the 60s. Why the flow through? Retention problems. Ooh. Retention problems are noticeable from both ends. And when I went to the Constitution and history for solutions, found they are not prescriptive, but very much leaving the way we address to that wonderful mixture of knowledge and imagination that is our ethos. When we connect with an applicant, the setting matters. What if we tried to unpack some of the confusion that happens to the perimeters of ancient and accepted Freemasonry? Our rhetoric implies we initiate a man, providing him an opportunity for character development. It is not uncommon to hear discussions that commodify membership. Business models happen when we try to redefine the craft as business. In practice, I wonder that we have unintentionally commodified initiates. Freemasonry offers so much that unless a lodge would be thoughtful about the environment it is introducing to a man, it could be blind to the sense it is failing to meet expectations. Wouldn't it be ever so easy to simply focus on what was wrong? And we tend to do much more of that without considering the issue might well be disappointment. What have we done wrong? Somebody's not attending. rather than a critic being a critic of the fellow or making up the excuse, some rationalization. What about the issue of disappointment? Ah, that's where things become sticky, you would say. I wonder if you agree that talking to the man about time would be a good place to start. I mean, you're thinking here, can this whole process be somehow preempted? I think yes. One thing that I notice is this matter of something. It's like, what's the most important thing to you about you is your time, the time that you dedicate or give to any pursuit. And yeah, I'm not talking about sloth. I'm not talking about resolution. I'm talking about movement, engagement. So it's easier to focus on right or wrong, being divisive, you know. But what if it is the issue is disappointment? I wonder if you agree that talking to the man about time would be a good place. Freemasonry also requires the time to balance responsibilities. No, and I reject the notion of the latter, you know, that our time is a matter of priority and something is on the bottom and something is on the top, because it's floating, it's a dynamic. I reject that notion. Simplistic as it is, here's the bottom rung and it's my masonry, and then above that is what? The health of people around me? No, it's usually family or jobs and things like that. Never do you hear, and we're boys that aren't raised to consider the importance of our time to us, to do things that are critically important to us. Oh, be glib about it, sure. Whatever I'm doing is important. You know what I mean. The deeper penetration, those conversation of conscience. Freemasonry requires time to balance responsibility. No one intends you to feel an all-consuming Masonic schedule will supersede life. If we are completely honest with him, we would tell him how important it is that he first respect his own time. Entering the craft might be suitable today or tomorrow, or at a time when you will not feel overloaded. This is how we encourage mature reflection. Is Freemasonry a behavior or an intellectual pursuit or elements of both? How does compliance enter into the process? Spectrum. Thank you. Quite a time there. Wow. With Joe Henderson and Ron Carter and Elvin Jones. Yeah, we're not going to be dismissive here about the kind of music that we play for him. Yeah. I've turned now to what we like to think is a version of truths about our existence in the world that we live in that can be expressed. I find that poetry is like, in a way, in my mind, it's like cubism. It takes our perception beyond, it stretches it. What if we had the capacity to see an object or a person from different perspectives at the same time? What would it look like? Wow, Pablo Picasso gave us a version, and some people went with it and asked the question, what is it that I'm seeing here? What's the point? And others just could not leave that concrete nature of the reality around them. Oh, it's not, and some people I think made the mistake of thinking, well, this is an option, and there should be no option. Well, there's no rule book on what should and shouldn't be other than an understanding. This is an interesting piece of work. The poet that I've chosen today is William Butler Yeats. Yes, that William Butler Yeats. I'm going to share with you a poem, When You Are Old. Now, before you assume it's all about you, just hold on here. I'll tell you a little bit about this poem and Yeats, just to give you the nature of the man. And you decide whether this Irish poet is an inspiration or his thinking was inspired or not. It's a short poem in 12 lines and 3 stanzas. And it's the product of the early period in Yeats' poetic career. Interestingly, it's addressed to Maud Gonne, with whom he was very much in love. It forms a part of the group of poems published in 1893 with the title The Rose. It expresses the poet's distress at the disastrous onslaught of time. In this poem, the poet narrates how his beloved Maud would grow old with the passage of time. Her liveliness and youthful energy would vanish, and she would pass the time dozing by the fireside, as old people want to do. She would perhaps pick up the volume of the poet's collected poems and slowly go through the verses wherein the poet has declared his love for her and admired her graces and charms. She would be reminded of the loveliness of her eyes that she once possessed and their deep shadows. At that time, she might think that many young people loved her for her beauty and youth, but there was only one whose love was sincere and genuine, and it was certainly the poet himself. The poet loved her not for her physical beauty only, but he loved her for her soul. It was the poet among all others who could feel for her and love her because sorrow and suffering were depicted on her face. The perusal of the poet's love poems would set his beloved thinking longingly of the past, and she would then realize the worth and importance of the poet's love. With the realization, she would mutter to herself with anguish that he was no more alive. He was dead and gone, and his soul must either be hovering among the mountains or it must have become part of the galaxy of stars overhead. So the poem presents a portrait of decaying and dying youth and beauty. The poet has referred to it time and again, quite passionately, all through his poetic career. Maud Gonne, his beloved, was proud and headstrong. The poet sounds a note of warning to her. The idea is that if she does not reciprocate his love, which is not merely physical but spiritual too, she would have to repent for her folly in her old age. Her youth and beauty would wither and vanish one day, and lovers would hover around her, lured by her bloom, would desert her one by one. And then she would smart with a sense of remorseful agony for the cruelty and callousness toward the poet. The poet intends to forewarn her. This woman was an Irish actress and a revolutionary, and he proposed to her over and over and over again, and she rejected him. And she maintained, here's the reasoning, that his unrequited love contributed to the effectiveness of his writing. In 1903, she married another man, and Yeats eventually married another woman in 1917, and the marriage lasted until his death in 1939. Background. Subtext. When you are old and gray and full of sleep and nodding by the fire, take down this book and read slowly and dream of the soft look your eyes once had and their shadows deep. How many loved your moments of glad grace and loved your beauty with love false or true? But one man loved the pilgrim soul in you and loved the sorrows of your changing face. And bending down beside the glowing bars, murmur a little sadly how love fled and paced among the mountains overhead and hid his face amid a crowd of stars. That worked. That worked. Johnny Hodges, 1958. Sit back and remember, this is an acquired taste. The sonic effects, acquired. And not something to be served to regularly, unless, you know, you're the kind of person that will sit down to be forced to have a glass of Merlot with some foie gras, pâté foie gras. You know, if you have to be forced to that kind of meal, or in a sunny day, yes, my good friend and I used to enjoy a bottle of Gewürztraminer there, just because it seemed right for not only for weddings and receptions, but, you know, sunny days. Oh, beautiful. So if you sit back and let me know what you think about this. We're, you know, time and again refer to the work of Ars Quattro Coronati, the work, the nature of that is an exploration of history and symbolism and philosophy. We extract philosophy, understanding, that is, from information. Here, we're looking at Colin Dyer's collation of ideas. And it has enough historical content to give validity to the course, those point connections between the points of light that he's made for us through this interesting book, Symbolism in Craft Freemasonry. Fascinating book. But, you know, somebody that likes to do this, do I do this all the time? I guess I tend to find that I'm stimulated and inspired by the work of this type of Mason. And often I'll talk about him as one of the scholars, but I mean that he is exceptional because he's made a contribution and then he's shared it, and it helps our understanding. So in your library, organize your material if you're having some difficulty with this. Freemasonry is not this amalgam. It's not this entropy. It's not. Organize it. Philosophy, history, and symbolism. And watch what happens when you do. Put your books in that kind of, you know, use those reference points, those touchstones, and see what happens. It makes it easier to withdraw information. I'm just trying to make something convenient for you and make the point that it isn't just this grayness and uniformity. Far from it. It's far more dynamic, more like the fractal geometry. Mm-hmm. Well, you know fractal geometry. You're not still trapped by, we're dealing with flat earth society folk here. Euclidean geometry, yes. We had that for how many centuries? And then you know about fractal geometry. Mm-hmm. Mm. Let's also help ourselves to a discussion or some ideas about the third degree. This seems to be one that's put out there quite a bit as a benchmark for you and I in terms of expectations. High expectations, we would hope. Hmm? From the earliest times, even in the early days of the 18th century, when there was but a two-degree system of masonry, this higher degree had a special significance. And under the earliest constitutions, it could only be conferred in Grand Lodge itself. This situation was quite quickly changed followed closely by a division of the lower degree into two, and so giving a third step system more in keeping with the odd number concept, or perhaps superstition, of the Masons at the time. But the master's degree, as Preston averred toward the end of the century, was still something special and achieved by the relative few. This was certainly the practice in the original 1717 or Moderns Grand Lodge, although as time passed, the full progression may have been more easily obtained in the rival Ancients Grand Lodge. One of the reasons for this may have been the proliferation of additional degrees, which tended to be worked in the normal lodge among the ancients and not as separate organizations. The ancients also regarded the royal arch degree as the real kernel of their masonry. The moderns would have nothing official to do with degrees other than the three basic craft ceremonies, even refusing officially to recognize the royal arch, which was separately organized for moderns under a grand chapter. If the ancients looked for a normal progression through all the degrees they had practiced, then, however important it might be, the candidate for the royal arch and other additional degrees must have taken all three craft degrees first. There is some evidence that at first, in the very early days, the degree was intended for rulers in the craft, requiring some qualification rather than for anyone just interested. For a large part of the 18th century, lodges which were called just for the conferment of the third degree were termed master's lodges and were often held in addition to regular meetings. In these circumstances, only master masons were summoned. Isn't that an interesting process? So far, he's really compressed some interesting history. In this degree, it is the third of the great lights which occupies the attention. The compasses is concerned with circles, and when the great lights are called to the candidate's attention, it is to demonstrate that he has now reached a point where this instrument is free for his use, in order that he may render a circle complete. In the earlier degrees, the sun was shown going round part of a circle, and the central point had been discovered. But now this central point may be used to describe a full circle to demonstrate the due bounds are Masonic duties promised in the first degree on first acquaintance with those great lights. Restraint and definition are the two twin messages it gives, and these are related to the complete teaching of the third degree. Put a pin in that, restraint and definition. For the Mason must recognize his duties, his responsibilities for what they are, and then exercise a proper restraint on himself in seeing them carried out. Oh, so much for peaks and quarrels, I would say. Unmasonic. My goodness. This center, the unknown object of the search in the middle chamber in the second degree, is now shown to be not an end in itself, as the second degree may have seemed to indicate, but a stage on the longer road and a starting point for the next stage. In defining the center point, the second degree has prepared the candidate who now has a defined point on which to place the static leg of the compasses he may now use. A circle, a complete figure enclosed by one continuous line, is a complex and mystical figure requiring more intensive study than the more simple triangular and square figures of earlier times. And so is progress shown. The candidate in this degree becomes aware that God is the very center of the lodge. It is built around him and him as the starting point. The bounds of our lives, duties, and actions may be more readily drawn. In the opening of a Master Mason's Lodge, reference is made to the circle and its center and how its bounds thus set, a Master Mason may be kept from error. The circle has ever been a symbol of eternity. From the line comprising it has no beginning or end. This reminder of eternity is the lesson also of the allegory which comprises the work of the third degree. The pattern and symbolism of this ceremony is different from those through which the candidate has already passed. This is stressed in earlier times by a combined tracing board doing duty for the first two degrees, but a separate board of hieroglyphics came into use quite early for the third degree. At the construction of the ceremonies after 1813, some proof of being properly qualified was inserted into this degree. It is doubtful if this was in the actual ceremonial work in earlier forms. A circumambulation and an advance toward the east in some form were probably the only similarities in late 18th century raisings to the other ceremonies. This was a degree which related to the third dimension. With the attainment of it, the candidate was able to appreciate a solid body and made a clear advance toward perfection. The stone or true die or square, the cube. The theme of the degree is that one. According to many of the speculative writers through the years, it's found in many religions in the form of an allegory or legend in the old mysteries. The message is plain, that true fidelity to one's principles can only be shown by being prepared to make the supreme sacrifice, if that be necessary, and thus can true immortality be obtained. William L. Wilmshurst says, hence the third degree is that of mystical death, of which bodily death is taken as figurative, just as bodily birth is taken in the first degree as figurative or entrance upon the path of regeneration. In all the mystery systems of the past will be found this degree of mystical death as an outstanding and essential feature prior to the final stage of perfection or regeneration.
Look for the silver lining whene'er a cloud appears in the blue. Remember somewhere the sun is shining, and so the right thing to do is make it shine for you, a heart full of joy and gladness will always banish sadness and strife. So always look for the silver lining and try to find the sunny side of life. Thank you.
heart full of joy and gladness will always banish sadness and strife. So always look for the silver lining and try to find the sunny side of life. Kit Baker. Well, thank you for tuning in today. Maybe these metaphors do make sense. Maybe they help us address some of the things that we see in reality in lodges, that connection between people, that awkwardness. They're not mechanistic. We aren't an extrapolation, we're real. We bring all the complexity. We blur the lines. Masonry, it seems, allows us and enables us to provide context for ourselves to see the, not to be Pollyanna about it, but there's an optimism to Freemasonry. It's not a harbinger of crime or aggression. Far from it. It's authenticity. And as we learn, as we study Freemasonry, it's about restraint, it's about control and awareness. But it is just that door that it's open to a man, whether he goes through that or not, that's entirely up to him. You and I might know and see a lot of men that haven't gone through that door, that are not interested or don't have the wherewithal to see themselves in less than a self-conscious way, or more than a self-conscious way, as malleable, as in need of change and improvement. I think the fundamental to this notion of character development is the notion that somehow we're less than perfect. And even the idea of aspiring to some level of perfection is a little bit, what? Exceptional? The exception would be that we go through Freemasonry without having a clearer understanding of what it is, or any understanding of what it is, but we can certainly do ourselves a favor and not seem so awkward. So awkward. And it's, I think, particularly legitimate to admit that the answers that we have to things going on around in the world around us are complicated. So as we move forward with Masonic Effects, we ask ourselves, what questions are pertinent, what questions should not be raised with men? We have an existential crisis underway. Would we think that Freemasonry will address this? The environment, that which nurtures and produces life, huh? If that no longer exists, well, it's been, 60 million years since the dinosaurs roamed, 65 million years since the dinosaurs roamed. And I'm not talking about their leftovers, the little birds flying around. When dinosaurs existed in that simple form for a lot longer than humanity has been on the planet. So let's try not to take too much for granted. Does Freemasonry have a bearing? Should we have some ideas? Well, I think in the meantime, the answer is yes. Equip yourself. I don't mean with this populist tripe, whether it's good or bad. It is what it is, and it's far too serious for somebody to be pontificating on the subject. There's a lot of information coming at us. And it's not about who's to blame. Oh my goodness, the politicians are so weak-minded about this. Somebody's fault, it's not our fault, it's somebody's fault. Well, our lifestyle is going to change, just like it always has. When I was a boy, we didn't have plastic bags, disposable everything. We didn't have disposable forks and plates and stuff. We didn't. Oh, come on. You think about the life of your grandparents. All those folks out there claiming that it was good in the good old days, well, suck it up. The good old days are coming round again. And travel will be different, like it was before. Did your great-grandparents fly all over the place? Well, if they had an unusual level of economic independence, perhaps, or they had the kind of work that allowed them to do that. But for recreational purposes, hey, better be sure that we're able to be satisfied with what we have, whatever it is. And I know where I am. The early polls are suggesting that a great number of people refuse to contribute. Well, here's the little interesting part. It doesn't matter. Refusal doesn't matter, and it's expected. My goodness, of course. Whether you call it selfishness or silliness or just misanthropy, you know, it doesn't matter. Temperatures are rising. Droughts are happening. There's a scarcity of water more and more and more around the world. So if you're sitting on the edge of a lake, somebody's going to come for it and want a drink. So are we going to keep doing the things? It's like, you think about it. Remember in the glory days, spittoons were in the saloons. Today, if you saw a spittoon, you would be repulsed. We go into a saloon and the room would be blue. We go into lounges at work and the room was blue with cigarette smoke. Who didn't smoke was the question. But we've learned. And we've used that learning. That wasn't just necessarily common sense. Common sense told us that there was some science there and it was important. But did everybody? No, I remember a fellow telling me, nobody's going to tell me to use a seatbelt. Oh. Yep, it's the kind of world. So no, nobody's expecting that you're going to be ready to make the sacrifices necessary. Far from it. We're going to look at our weaknesses, our selfishness. Our refusal is all predictable. But the change, that's coming. It's already underway. We face a million species on the brink of extinction. Oh, you're pretty sure that we're not on that list? We're somewhere. We might be further down. We may be the apex predator at some point. But we're on that line. Better to come to some understanding, wouldn't you say? Thanks for tuning in. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here. We'll look for you again soon. Thanks. And wherever you are, commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. But be thoughtful about yourself.